preamble to what I wanted to say, to revisit some of the thoughts from this morning about Freud's three essays. And these are thoughts I had that I think are sort of replicated in some ways and perhaps in other ways questioned by some of what was shared this morning. But I would suggest that we can say that part, at least, of Freud's vision and his account of sexuality in the three essays, or at least perhaps in some of the essays and some of the footnotes, is what we could think of as a queer account of sexuality, certainly in relation to the thinking of his time and any previous and contemporary accounts. There's a great deal of radical thinking, as I think broadly we've agreed, within what he starts to propose anyway. But we also know that he remained extremely conflicted about certain aspects of sexuality and not least same-sex desire. And one of the speakers this morning was one of the, I think, members of the audience was sort of bringing out the way in which perhaps page by page he will contradict himself. And I think the sense of the internal struggle that he continued to grapple with, ultimately, in a sense, one could say unsuccessfully, or at least not to resolve throughout his life, is a striking and sort of a significant feature of his thinking. His work in this area could have led to important developments if his successors had been either enlightened or brave enough to develop his thinking in that same more radical direction. But we know, broadly speaking, that this wasn't the case. I mean, putting it rather oversimplistically, but I think there were two opportunities, in a sense, for the post-Freudian psychoanalytic enterprise, one of which was to develop the radical components of Freud's thinking, and the other of which was to erect a sort of rigid barrier of safety, perhaps a bit like Trump's wall in between America and Mexico, to protect from the disturbance of so much of what Freud is at least beginning to propose, what he's at least able to start thinking about, even if he can't follow through his own enterprise fully. So I think the development of ideas as, you know, sort of 100 or so years after, 100 years plus since the original publication of the three essays, the development of ideas from other disciplines, and queer theory not least, I think, have come to occupy a vital role, both in challenging ways of thinking about sexuality that Freud himself initiated, but also in pushing ahead and being able to develop some of the thinking that he was, in a sense, successfully able to put out into the early psychoanalytic community. Now, in thinking about what we're asked to do today, I'm thinking of particularly of the introduction and the afterword in Noreen and Eve's book. I was particularly interested in two of the four questions that are posed, I think it's page 2 of Noreen's introduction. And the two central questions here are sort of addressing clinical practice. And one of them is phrased as follows: how do social, cultural, and historical attitudes towards sexuality impact on the transference and counter-transference, consciously and unconsciously? So this is what we could recognize as an expression of what we tend to refer to as the psychosocial, the recognition that we should not concentrate exclusively on the internal at the expense of the external, that we both in terms of the patient's experience, but equally the therapist's experience, we need to think about the experience externally, but equally the way in which the external sits within the internal, the unconscious and the internal world of both patient and therapist, and to allow that to become part of the discourse within the psychoanalysis. But the other question, the second of these four questions, interested me particularly, and this is the way it's phrased: in what ways does sexuality get played out for and between the psychoanalytic practitioner and the patient? Now, this is actually two questions. And one of them, I think, is a good deal less reflected on, even in our more enlightened times, than the other. And that's the question of how sexuality gets played out for the practitioner and the patient. And I think this is a very, very interesting and important question, and one of those questions that we struggle with, I would say, as practitioners. At least I imagine I'm not the only practitioner in the room, or even theorist, for that matter, academic, to struggle with this. What's proposed? We would understand, I think, that the sexuality is played out for the patient, and particularly if the patient is in any way bringing some tension or internal conflict about their sexual or gender diversity, and arguably every patient is in one way or another, more or less explicitly. But this proposes equally that the therapist, just like the patient, is there to undertake some task of their own. And I think it's a task that we could most easily sum up as being an expression of their desire. In other words, that the therapist's desire is active in the consulting room and not just the patient's. So we can say that both people in the room, both bodies in the room, are there to identify, to articulate, to try meaningfully to express their desire, and that their respective desires may or may not be compatible with each other. And when I talk about identify, I mean using it in a broader sense of recognizing the desire, not necessarily in terms of categorizing it in a way that we might see as problematic. And I think the way in which the respective desires of practitioner and patient may not be compatible, or at least may set up tensions that, of course, could be creative, as could be seen as creative, as well as potentially as problematic, can be thought about in a number of ways, partly in terms of language, where either party may or may not feel that the terminology that's available to them, that's either familiar to them or that's available within our language and within our culture, or languages and cultures, may not feel that this terminology is adequate or of interest to them, that it may not seem to express what it is that they really feel. But equally, I think other ways in which there may be an incompatibility or a tension or a difference is how that desire is experienced, and hence potentially how it might be shared. And arguably, the sharing is something that's very fundamental to, as it were, a successful piece of psychoanalysis. The position of queer theory, in a broad sense, in terms of its resistance of identity-shaped boxes, and an insistence on an open and liberated approach to sexuality and the liveliness of sexuality, seems to me to be one that is at the same time both a natural fit for psychoanalysis, but equally at odds with it. One strength, potentially, of psychoanalysis is its openness to uncertainties and its allowing for instability. On the other hand, we know equally, whether we're practitioners or not, that a potential limitation of psychoanalysis is its wish to stick to its theories and an over-rigid application of them. And this is the contradiction, I think, at the heart of the encounter between psychoanalysis and queer theory, which is explored so, you know, so creatively and so richly in Noreen and Eve's book. Clinically, I think that the great gift of a queer view of sexuality is its offering to psychoanalysis of more questions and fewer certainties. But it's not necessarily, I speak for myself anyway, it's not necessarily a very comfortable place to sit. Thank you.